slow news days. Like, we don't always do 100% news here. You know, we can go on strange tangents and memory lane and stuff like that. But it does sometimes help to have like a what's a prompt. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Brian? Okay.
Yeah. I'm sorry, I was adjusting something. No, I'm here.
Yeah, prompts are a good thing to have on shows like this. Even prompting to go down, like I said, tangents or memory lane. Good morning, everybody, and welcome to LR Mornings with Kyle and
Brian.
And speaking of prompts, I want to revisit yesterday's episode for a quick minute. We talked about the Russo brothers wanting to do secret wars, and we had a good conversation. And after the show's done, Brian and I were just kind of chatting, you know, still chatting about the subjects, when he prompted me for what, Brian?
I don't remember.
You said what could they do with Spidey?
Like, oh, well, shit. Yeah. It's been a long day, guys. Sorry.
Long
I apologize.
Day.
Yes. Right. Yes. Okay, so... Damn, yeah, I completely forgot about that conversation. One of the most iconic images from Secret Wars is Spidey in the black costume. Like, mm-hmm. If you summarize Secret Wars in, you know, two or three images, that's typically one of them. And
it's
so,
the image I used for the thumbnail for the show yesterday.
So I, you know, it wasn't until after we finished recording, and I was just like, are they going to bring, you know... They almost have to bring in the Sony stuff. Mm-hmm. And then we talked about how, well, they've already, Venom, they skipped the step. You know, they skipped the whole portion of it being on Peter, and it went, you know, went straight to Brock. And what do you do? What do you do in that scenario? And you sort of laid out a way to fix it, just sort of a way to do it and that mm-hmm. would make sense. You wouldn't have to change anything radically. You wouldn't have to retcon anything, actually. It would follow the story. And I was like, shit, dude, that's a good idea.
So the idea I had was, and I don't like this. I don't like the Sony stuff being part of my MCU. But I've said before, if that's the price to pay to get MCU Spider-Man films, like legit MCU, like Feige's producing... then I could live with it. And so I said they bring both Venom and Spidey to the battle world the Beyonder does, and you have a situation in which the symbiote leaves Brock. Maybe they have an argument. Maybe he senses the power in Peter, but whatever the reason, it goes to Spidey and leaves Brock, which gives Brock a reason to hate Spider-Man for taking the symbiote for you know, however long. Mm-hmm. And then you could do a situation where the Beyonder sees that Brock no longer has power, so he sends him back, and now we've got, you know, symbiote black-suited Spider-Man. And you could go ahead and start touching on the contention on methods, you know. And so going into the next Spider-Man film after that, you could have Peter getting rid of the symbiote because of its, you know, murderous tendencies. And it goes back to Brock. And now you've got the Venom symbiote hating Peter Parker, Brock hating Spider-Man. I'm sure the symbiote probably will tell him that it's Peter Parker, and that's if they fix the whole Peter Parker's identity reveal in Far From Home. And there you go. It's fixed. The symbiote does have interactions with Spider-Man, and we can, Venom can keep the big white spider mark on his chest.
Yeah, it does everything. And I think, I mean, I could imagine the marketing of that where you have that big reveal in the second trailer or whatever of Spidey and the symbiote. You know, the way you said it, it makes sense. And it even sort of cool that we've already established the Brock relationship with the symbiote before it goes to Parker. Mm-hmm. I think that would be interesting too. We don't know what, you know, the whole Sony situation is going to be going, you know, forward. Yeah. So, but I think if they were to build to an event 5-10 years from now, it would be completely stupid to not want to be part of it, you know.
Yeah, well, Sony is completely stupid. They think we want a Madam Web movie, so. But yeah, so you guys can excuse me to tell us what you think about that idea down in the comments below, or if you've got a better way of getting the black suit on Spidey for Secret Wars. And you're right, I can see like the second trailer after the title, you know, Marvel's Secret Wars. You see Parker stand up in black, and then he looks at his hands exactly like the cover of that issue, and cut to black. Like I can see it, and I know people would be amazed by it.
Oh yeah.
It, you know, speaking of the black suit, some comic talk. One of the best story arcs ever came from Straczynski, J. Michael Straczynski, JMS, and it's the Back in Black arc. Do you remember that?
I do, yeah.
Fucking amazing. Wilson Fisk is in jail, orders a hit on Pete's family friends. And I think it was Aunt May that got hurt. I think it was her that got shot. And Peter makes or has already had a non-symbiote, but black suit. It's a black costume to kind of make a statement. And there's this awesome scene in the prison. Peter breaks into the prison, and he's talking to Fisk, and, you know, like, how I'm gonna beat you up. And then he takes off his mask and he goes, "This isn't Spider-Man, it's me, Peter Parker." And then he goes and fucking brutally beats Fisk. Like Fisk never stood a chance. Talks about how he could kill him,
Didn't say he was going to fill him with web or something?
Yeah, he was I could inject this web into your nose and into your sinus cavities and shit. Like he was, it was a very, very violent, you don't almost think Venom was on Peter. But he leaves him there instead so people can see a king fall. And what type of damage that would do to Fisk's reputation and stuff. It's a great story arc. I highly suggest it's pre One More Day.
Yeah,
it's pre One More Day, which One More Day was started out, and again with Straczynski, started out pretty decent, and then Joey Q Joe Quesada decided that he hated Spider-Man and was going to shit on him. And even Slott couldn't really, because it was Slott that took over afterwards for Brand New Day.
For years. Yeah.
Even he couldn't really get a lot of fans back into it. Created new villains. You remember what is there? The girl that does parkour, speedball, something like that.
Yeah, I don't remember.
She's in the Spider-Man game.
So was it Mr. Negative?
What am I? Yes, thinking? Yes, yeah, Mr. Negative played a big part. The freak, the weird mutated guy that was like goblin-esque, but he was different. I think it was called the Freak. And yeah, man, I dropped the book.
I did too. I mean, as a DC fan, I'm used to reboots of resets, but I think the thing that bothered me most about that was there had been, I don't have the energy to get in all this, but basically you had so many years of story that had built between, you know, Parker getting married and even the issues and struggles in that marriage. And you had all these things you've been building and then to just wipe it all away.
Yeah.
It's like, I understand wanting to keep characters around long term, but quit erasing, you know, a decade or two decades or three decades of their history. That annoys me.
Yeah. Quesada tried to sell it like we're getting back to classic Spider-Man. And it's like, no, dude, we were happy where we were at. He was still Spider-Man, but erasing the Mary Jane relationship was just dumb.
And I remember talking about this in depth at the time. It was like, if you really, really want that marriage over, you can end it. You know, they could get divorced. You could have them split up. Why the need to erase it that it ever happened? Why not have it go through a natural course? Maybe they move on from each other. You could have told that story. You could have grown the characters, and they chose not to.
Yep.
And that's my last on. we've talked so much about that in the past. I remember that was a big deal. Anybody who doesn't remember that time, you can find, I believe you could probably still find videos online, people burning their Spider-Man collections. And there was a lot of outrage.
JMS kind of left Marvel almost completely after
he
that.
Had a falling out because of that story. Yeah.
Because Quesada was the one allegedly, and I believe it 100%, that the final issue of One More Day was not what Straczynski had intended.
He took his name off of it.
Yeah.
it was a big deal. It was, for the comic world, that was, of the last couple decades, that was one of the biggest controversies, I would say.
Yeah. And Straczynski was kicking ass at Marvel, doing spinoff stories or what he was doing with the Spider-Man books. Requiem, Silver Surfer Requiem, is one of the best graphic novels you'll find. I think it could be considered a graphic novel. It's absolutely fucking amazing. And his Thor run.
His Thor was amazing.
Thor was fucking perfect. He kind of reset Thor without erasing everything. And his run on Thor actually inspired the first movie, and JMS is in the movie. He's the guy that discovers the hammer first. Excuse me, man. Diet sodas or zero sugar sodas really like to come back up.
I want to promote one thing real quick for JMS. One of my favorite things he's ever written was something called Midnight Nation. If you're in any way interested in JMS and you've never read that, I highly recommend seeking it out. I believe you can buy it on Amazon. You can probably get it on Kindle. It's called Midnight Nation. It's my favorite thing he's ever written.
Really?
Yes.
What company was it for? Do you remember?
I have a copy, but I don't feel like giving up.
Don't.
I'll look it up real quick.
JMS is one of the best writers out there. I don't know if people realize that he's probably been a part of your childhood, writing episodes of Ghostbusters, the real Ghostbusters cartoon. If you were ever visiting your grandparents, you probably saw episodes of Murder, She Wrote. He wrote a few episodes of that. Of course, he was responsible for Babylon 5.
Which I love.
And Sense 8, he was a part of, of Sense 8 as well. So, yeah. Big, big, been a lot of things. That Angelina Jolie movie, Changeling, that was JMS writing that. He's a really cool guy on Twitter.
Published through Image.
It was through Image. Okay,
yeah, you can find it on Amazon.com. You can find it right now, $22.85, and it is on Kindle. So there you go.
Yeah, that's not too bad at all. Him on Twitter is pretty funny. He answers a lot of questions. He's like a I don't know if he's an insomniac like I am, or if he's just nocturnal. But he's usually up really late and answers questions. And you can ask him, so like I asked him if he likes to put his French fries in a Frosty, and he was like, I don't get it. And I don't know, Brian, you've done it, right?
French I've fries done and it.
A chocolate Frosty.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, I fucking love it. It's a salty sweet thing. It's like candy or chocolate covered bacon. He responded funny that like I had issues and needed to seek help. And this is very, very, very cool. Very funny guy. So
we got to see him at Comic-Con.
Yeah.
Great panel. Comic-Con. Yeah, that's this week, right? Virtual Comic-Con.
Ooh, if today, I'm not mistaken.
Starts today, I believe. Yeah. I'll keep tabs on it, but I'll be busy at work.
So will we. At LRMonline.com. Oh, man. Yeah, we took like a, it was like a creative writing thing. And one of the first things he said was like, this is not a place to learn how to sell your work. I'm not here to tell you how to make money. If that's what you want, I'll give you a couple minutes to leave.
Yeah. Yeah. He's very straightforward, blunt.
And then somebody asked a question roundabout about how to get their stuff looked at and sold. And he's like, no, I told you to get out. It was pretty funny, man. Cool guy though. Really cool guy. Enjoyed that. Yeah, Comic-Con at home. I'm interested to see how it's going to be and how much big stuff actually comes out of it.
I think there'll be a few things, but nothing on the, I could be wrong. I don't think it'll be nothing on the level that it would have been, but I don't know. We'll see. Maybe, everyone seems to be wanting to do their own thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like everybody, so a lot of people are just not going to reveal anything there.
Do you think that right there, the fact that other studios are doing their own events, do you think that hurts Comic-Con in any way, or do you think it could potentially make the experience better for, I don't want to say real or true fans, but maybe hardcore comic fans? What do you think?
It'll change it, definitely. Whether or not, I just hope it never goes away. You know, I think they make so much money now, and I don't know what the expectation is as far as money and what to pull in, and if all the big companies pull out, will people stop wanting to go? You know, I don't know. I don't know the economics of it, so. I would need to know that, but as far as, I mean, we've attended it a couple times, and we were there before the corporations really took over, and we were there after.
There, yep, after.
And it was a radically different experience. I preferred the before times.
Oh yeah. Oh, 08. That was an absolutely amazing experience. And what's crazy is, we bought, you know, a 4-day passes like months after they had started selling them.
Yeah.
And now you're lucky if you can get through the queue for the 4-day passes. You're lucky if you could get through the queue, and they'll be sold out within 45 minutes to an hour, gone. And not, it would be faster if there weren't server issues and everything, because you've got hundreds of thousands of people trying to get a 4-day pass. It's crazy.
You used to be able to go on Sunday and just casually walk around, floors empty. I mean, it was just chill. Most people had left. It was real calm. That changed. Now Sunday is damn near like Saturday. And I mean, not quite. Obviously, Saturday is the most insane day, but Sunday's as packed. You know, the floor is just jammed, and it just became about waiting in lines. A lot of it. That's why we say if you ever get a chance to go, don't just focus on Hall H and the big panels. Make sure you can if you're doing the full week, carve out some of that in your schedule, but make time to explore the floor, explore around the town. You know, there's a lot of little events going on. Mm-hmm. Go randomly select a couple of the small panels. You might be surprised at what you'll find. It's, you know, a lot more intimate experience of, you know, being able to actually converse with a lot of those creators, because it's going to be less people. I find those are the things that you remember. Our weird Zachary Quinto story, you know, seeing him on an escalator and feeling like nerds, you know, just like, oh, we're fans. And I hate that I said that. But, you know, we were leaving. We saw Stanley, and we were leaving out the back way. It was the Hilton, I believe.
I believe so.
And we're on the escalator, and we look down. We're like, "Oh shit, Zachary Quinto is coming up!" And it was three of us, and we all at the same time had the realization that we're going to be, you know, like 6 inches between us and Zachary Quinto. And so we all start blurting out, you know, we love your work, we're fans." And he was real nice, and just like, "Oh yeah, thanks," and nodded, and he was cool. But shit like that happens in the little moments through those conventions.
The Ninja Turtles panel we were at. They were talking about doing another movie or something like that, or a TV show. They're always talking about stuff like that. We've covered some of that on this show. And sorry. And
Eastman is so cool. He's just walking around everywhere, just chilling.
Legit guy. And but it was funny, the gentleman that plays Kino in Ninja Turtles 2 Secret of the Ooze, he had been sitting in the crowd, nobody recognized him, and they do get to the Q&A, and he gets up to the mic and he's like, "So is there room for a pizza delivery guy in this?" And everybody realizes who it is, and it was just a really, really awesome moment. Sitting there, seeing that, you know, being a part of that, and that was in one of those rooms where there may have been 150 chairs, maybe. Mm-hmm. You know, couple ballroom 20 events were really cool.
That's my favorite room.
what's that?
Ballroom 20 is my favorite room as far as I like. Oh. It's air conditioned. It's comfortable. It's crowded, but it's comfortable. Hall H is a fucking nightmare.
Yeah. We saw because we went in for a there was a Doctor Who panel, I think, before, and they had a Doctor Who wedding in it. And then we got in for the last bit of Dean Koontz or something like that is when they let us in, and we were waiting on the Battlestar Galactica panel, moderated by no less than Kevin Smith, and that was like the last time. That was going to be, the series was coming to an end that year. So this was like the last time the cast of the Galactica were going to be together. And Kevin did a great job moderating it, and they got a standing ovation, man. It was almost sad, you know, because Like that's it. From now on, if you see a Battlestar Galactica panel, it's not going to be all of them. I mean, Katie Sackhoff was there. Edward James Olmos was there.
The emotions on all of their faces. Yeah. I mean, that was you could feel it in the room. And if you were a fan of that show and being in that room on that day, yeah, it was very special.
Yeah, I think Katie Sackhoff started crying.
I believe so. Yeah.
You know, and then were you with us when they were doing the Dollhouse panel? I think that was the next year, and you had Tomo Pinkett, I think is his name. He played Hilo on Battlestar, and yes, he had Eliza Dushku.
Because I remember the joke.
So for those of you that never seen Battlestar Galactica, what started in the 2003 miniseries before going on to regular show, I think it's 2005 or something like that. The humanoid Cylons, their spines glow when they're mid-coitus.
Yes.
This is a good way to put it. So the gentleman that played Hilo from Battlestar is in the show Dollhouse with Eliza, and somebody gets up and they ask the question to Tomo. They're like, so does Eliza's spine glow?
Yeah.
And I'm sorry, I just hit my table. Yeah, he asked, does Eliza's spine glow? And the crowd just laughs their ass off. She looks confused. He leans over and tells her.
Yeah, she didn't know what the guy was implying.
Man. No, it was just funny to see her face when Hilo or Tomo, whatever name you want to go with, when he leaned over and told her what it was, seeing her face like shocked. And then she laughed. She did. She did laugh. It was great. God damn, man. There's a lot of really good memories at San Diego. Part of me hopes that the big movie studios moving away opens up more room for not just comics, but comics, games, and TV. I think TV studios and even streaming studios can fill the gap of Warner Brothers and Marvel, Disney, Fox now part of Disney, Lucasfilm part of Disney. If all of that goes to D23, there's a lot of room there. Because that's like four fucking sections that used to be taken up that are gone. And while I'll miss things like a life-size Jabba the Hutt, that was pretty cool, that you could take pictures with. While I'll miss things like that at San Diego, I remember walking the floor, like you said, and seeing something called Bob the Angry Flower. And
yes.
And picked it up, just looked at it, laughed, like legitimately laughing out loud, looking at it. And this is an old style comic strip. And I think I bought two books. I think you bought one or two books, mm-hmm. and we got them signed by the gentleman that writes Bob the Angry Flower. It was a great find.
Well, that's the coolest thing, like I was saying before. You walk those floors, explore every nook and cranny, any comic you see, any piece of artwork you see, there's a strong chance that the person standing behind that desk is the one that made it.
Yeah.
And so to get to interact with them, get information about it, they'll, like you said, sign it and stuff like that. They're excited to, you know, share their work. And yeah, you get those little personal connections with whatever it is you're, you know, purchasing. I love that stuff.
Yeah. And that's how I discovered the Jed Henry Japanese style prints that I have, the Ninja Turtle one and now the Final Fantasy VII one. And while walking the floor, real personal memories. Hell, Sunday at the Marvel Marvel Studios booth, our Marvel booth. It's just the Marvel booth, not the studios was part of it, but we're standing there hanging out, and somebody drops a few of these. They were going to be handed out as prizes for like a trivia game or something like that. They were Stark Industries thumb drives, and it had videos and artwork from the Iron Man movie. And they're really cool. They say Stark Industries on them. They're red and gold. And this guy dropped them. And I picked them up, tapped them on the shoulder, and said, "Here you go," instead of keeping it, you know? And he gave us a couple of them, one for each of us. Like, appreciate your honesty. Here you go, you know? Sunday talking to CB Cebulski about Spider-Man.
He was just chilling.
And you know,
that's the thing. Like you said, a lot of artists, writers, whatever, they're just hanging out. Some of them are just chilling. And that's part of the whole experience.
What did you think about New York when we went in 2016?
I had a good time. It is different. It's not nearly the scale of San Diego, but it's getting there. And I think my favorite thing about it was going off site. You know, there was a lot of cool stuff around the city far as it, part of the con, you know, because they had put panels in different buildings away
that
from the
theater was really nice.
Yes.
Where we saw the Evil Dead.
Exactly. So stuff like that was neat, yeah.
My nearly 3-year-old son, I'm having to cover his eyes and ears.
Yeah, that shit.
We did not expect them to show
the most like twisted episode ever. Yeah. Yeah, that was funny.
Do you still have your foam chainsaw?
Yes. Yes,
I do. Yeah, we've got our foam chainsaws too.
I was pissed because I left. It was in that building that you saw Sting, right?
Yeah,
because there was a Turtles panel.
Part of the Ninja Turtles panel, yeah.
And I left. I can't even remember what the hell I went to do. I went to go somewhere, and y'all got, Sting was there.
Yeah, they were doing the WWE Ninja Turtles, which Michelangelo was Macho Man, Randy Savage, and my grandmother's a huge Macho Man fan. So I got her that. But what was great was talking about that 2012 cartoon. And we were in cosplay, me, Christine, and Lucas. Lucas was Raphael, the Ninja Turtle. Christine was done up like April from the 2012 series. And I was done up like Casey Jones. And two really cool things happened. One, Lucas got it hadn't been released yet, but the Super Shredder toy, they handed out some toys, and they saw the little man in costume and gave him that. And then, as the panel was ending, I yelled out, "Where's Usagi Yojimbo?" The rabbit, and somebody heard me on stage, and I think he said, "Just keep watching, or we're working on that, or something." It was a little bit of response. I went through every article on that panel and only found one person that mentioned me, not by name, but they goes, someone from the crowd asked about fan favorite Usagi Yojimbo, which many of you should know is the rabbit samurai from the comics, but was in the old cartoon. And in season 5 they finally brought in Usagi, so little moments like that was probably my favorite, being in that Ninja Turtles panel in cos. There was that guy that was in Shredder cosplay that was just fucking phenomenal. Like 1990s movie Shredder. And that was really, really awesome. I love stuff like that, man.
Yeah.
The Hammerstein ballroom. That's where that was at. So, yeah. Well, we could talk about conventions forever. Hopefully next year, conventions open up again. I can't recommend enough that you guys out there go to your local or the you know, if you've got a major city that has a convention, an hour or two away, go to it. I mean, you could drive, you know, two hours there, you know, hour and a half or whatever to and from each day, or get a hotel and stay. Go to your small ones, especially if you're a fan of art. Artist Row is massive at smaller venues, and the crafts and artwork, prints, sculptures, like all of that stuff. Those people are there at those smaller cons, and you can find some amazing. I found a Ninja Turtle dog collar for our dog Riza, you know. So check out your small or medium size conventions, and I look forward to seeing what does happen. I had always said they need to get the crowd size back down, and they could raise the ticket prices, cut the number of people they're going to a lot or allow, and I would be happy. Like, if we could get 08 style San Diego,
yeah,
I personally could pay $250 per person if you promised me 08 style experience, you know.
Yeah.
$250. I'd do it. Yeah. So, anyways, thank you guys for listening to today, and I hope you guys check out LRMonline.com every single day for all of your entertainment news needs and opinions. The YouTube channel is up and running as always. Go check out old episodes of LRM Ranks It. Great fun show that we used to do, now a mostly weekly column, and of course this podcast channel with Breaking Geek Radio, LR Mornings, the Geek Scholar Movie News, lots of really cool stuff connected to us, like the Comic Source podcast from Jace. And yeah, subscribe, ladies and gentlemen. That's like lifeblood for us is subscriptions. So just click that subscribe button, and we appreciate it. Brian would appreciate you if you subscribed to his YouTube channel.
It's Pulp Mythos, PULPMYTHOS. It's one word. Currently doing Perry Mason reviews on Sunday nights. I'll be doing Lovecraft Country when it starts in 4 weeks, and movie reviews up as well.
There you go. And Brian, he's probably the only person whose collection of movies and obsession with movies rivals my own. So go check that out. And you guys can find me at that Kyle Malone on Twitter. Thank you guys so much for listening. We'll talk to you tomorrow.